Our next case for argument this morning is Trustmark Insurance against John Hancock. Mr. Koukouras.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the preliminary injunction issued by the District Court in this case should be vacated, both because the Court lacked the authority to disrupt an arbitration between these two parties and remove the party-appointed arbitrator prior to a final award, and because the preliminary injunction substitutes the District Court's judgment for the arbitrator's judgment in how a confidentiality agreement should apply in determining the preclusive effect of an award in a prior arbitration between the same parties on the same issues.
You know, I want to just start you off, if I might. And, I mean, apparently it's Trustmark's position that the first arbitration only held that some of the retrocession business that was written by John Hancock was covered and, you know, properly ceded. I assume that that's not John Hancock's position. But what I want to know is, I want to know that, but I'm sure that that's correct. But does that question need to be resolved by this court, or is that a question to be resolved by an arbitration panel?
To take the second part first, that question absolutely is one to be resolved by an arbitration panel.
Get to the mic.
Your Honor, that is an issue that is precisely for the arbitration panel. On the first note, it is Trustmark's position in the second arbitration that it is entitled to an entirely new ruling on whether retrocession business is covered by the reinsurance agreement at issue, the very same agreements that were at issue in the first arbitration and addressed by that first panel. This court in Smith versus the American Arbitration Association stated clearly that the time to challenge an arbitration on whatever grounds, including bias, is when the arbitration is completed and an award rendered. The preliminary injunction in this case upsets that because it was issued on the very eve of an arbitration hearing, removing the arbitrator. The appropriate time for the court to have considered a challenge to the arbitrator service would have been after the award was rendered. Separately, Trustmark failed to articulate in the district court and does not articulate in this court how it would suffer irreparable harm if a preliminary injunction were not issued, and how it can lack an adequate remedy at law when the Federal Arbitration Act gives parties a remedy to challenge arbitral awards in court after the awards are issued.
Trustmark argues that our circuit's precedent states that if the dispute under the ancillary agreement, that's in this case, of course, you know, would be the confidentiality agreement, can be fully resolved without any reference to the initial agreement, the dispute isn't subject to arbitration. And isn't the confidentiality agreement a separate freestanding contract that doesn't require any reference to the initial agreement?
No, Your Honor. The confidentiality agreement arises out of the reinsurance agreement. Indeed, the confidentiality agreement was issued in the course of arbitrating a dispute under the reinsurance contracts as required by those contracts. And this court, in the Sweet Dreams case, stated that when an arbitration provision that says that all disputes arising out of that underlying contract are subject to arbitration, the arising out of clause reaches all disputes having their origin or genesis in the contract, whether or not they implicate interpretation or performance of the contract per se.
Look, this may sound very simplistic to you, and of course, ordinarily, courts should be very deferential to arbitration agreements, and we should be really wary of piecemeal litigation. But will you explain to me why the confidentiality agreement is not a separate agreement.
It is a separate in that sense, but it clearly arises out of the reinsurance.
Well, but many things arise out of, but, you know, your precedent remark worries me.
But the issue here is whether the dispute over the confidentiality agreement arises out of the reinsurance contract. It's all disputes, not all contracts, but all disputes having their origin or genesis in that reinsurance contract are subject to arbitration. The issue before the arbitration panel in the second arbitration was what, if any, preclusive effect the panel should give to the first arbitration award that was issued in an arbitration over the same issues between the same parties. Trustmark asserted that that first arbitration award should not be given preclusive effect, and they asserted that the confidentiality agreement prohibited the second panel from giving the first award preclusive effect. In order to make the determination which these arbitrators were obligated to make about that preclusive effect, they necessarily had to review the confidentiality agreement and determine whether that prohibited them. The arbitrators determined that the confidentiality agreement did not prohibit them from stating that certain issues were precluded in the second arbitration. The arbitrators are well within their rights and indeed obligated to interpret that, and it is not the place for the court to determine whether the arbitrators correctly interpreted the contracts or not. Because the dispute over issue preclusion arose out of the reinsurance, the issue was clearly one for the arbitrators.
Well, the second arbitration was essentially of the reinsurance agreement, right?
It was an arbitration of a dispute arising under the very same agreement, Your Honor.
No, but it was not a... They weren't arbitrating the confidentiality agreement. They were arbitrating the reinsurance agreement.
That's absolutely right.
Therefore, I don't see what difference it makes whether they should have been analyzing the arbitration agreement by arbitration or by the courts. Either. That seems to be a point that's raised here. But as I understand it, the arbitration was directed at the reinsurance agreement anyway. So what difference does it make?
Agreed. You are correct that the underlying dispute was properly in arbitration. There's no disagreement on that. The issue was whether the first arbitration award could have preclusive effect. This court has stated repeatedly that the question of preclusive effect of a first arbitration, like any other defense, is an issue for a subsequent arbitrator to decide. Now, Trustmark itself asserted that the confidentiality agreement stated no, the first arbitration could not have preclusive effect. Of course, the arbitrators had the authority to determine whether that was accurate or not. They made the decision that the confidentiality agreement did not preclude the first arbitration.
I don't know that you're done with, you know, this area, but I really want to get this in before you sit down. And that's whether or not there's a difference in your view between a court's finding that an arbitrator is biased in a finding that an arbitrator is disinterested and thus not able to fulfill the party's agreement regarding the terms of arbitration. And then, I mean, if you want to go back to where you were, that's fine, but I just want to...
I think there is a difference. I think the court's finding here goes beyond bias, and I think the court clearly erred in two regards. First, the arbitrator did not breach the confidentiality agreement. And second, even if he had, there would be nothing about his conduct or whatever that breach would be that would render him no longer disinterested in the outcome of the arbitration.
Wait, say that again.
First, there was no breach of the confidentiality agreement. He had the authority to extend the agreement to cover the second arbitration. The second point, Your Honor, was that even if that somehow were a breach, which it was not, that did not render him interested in the outcome of the arbitration. Well, the reason the district court held that he would be interested as a result of the breach. First was that he may be personally, individually liable to Trustmark for that breach. That's incorrect, Your Honor. He's protected by arbitral immunity, and that's not disputed. The second reason the court found that he may be interested is because he was converted into a fact witness, not subject to examination. But that's an error as well. He's not particularly a fact witness to anything. The first arbitration is a matter of record. The proceedings were transcribed. Briefs are submitted. The final award is in writing. He's no more a fact witness to that than a judge would be who is addressing an issue that he or she previously addressed. If there were a breach, Your Honor, it would presumably have occurred at the time that the arbitrator participated in a decision that extended the confidentiality for the first one to the second one. That decision happened in 2007. It was over 2 years before this complaint was filed seeking to remove the arbitrator. The parties proceeded in arbitration for another 2 years, demonstrating clearly there's no irreparable injury.
I might be there with you on that portion.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no additional questions, I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Kokoris.
Good morning. May it please the Court.
Everett Seigel
on behalf of Trustmark Insurance Company.
Yeah.
Your Honor, this is a contract case. It's not an arbitration case. It's not an FAA case. It's a contract case. Mr. Gurvitz signed a contract to maintain confidentiality of the first arbitration. He breached that contract.
If the second arbitration had proceeded and Trustmark ultimately lost because Mr. Gurvitz was disinterested, couldn't Trustmark then sue in district court? And the district court, and if the district court found that the panel wasn't qualified, couldn't the harm to Trustmark be remedied by an order for a new arbitration and monetary payment that would remedy any harm here?
Your Honor, here's the problem with that. The review of Mr. Gurvitz's breach of a contract that's not subject to arbitration would have been effectively unreviewable if Judge Zagel let this arbitration proceed. As the Court is aware, arbitrators are not required to provide written opinions. The panel in this Hancock...
I'm lost by the claim that it would be effectively unreviewable.
Me too.
If a disqualified arbitrator is participating... the award of the panel will be set aside. It doesn't matter whether they gave reasons or not. So if your client loses the arbitration and Gurvitz is indeed disqualified, the award will be set aside, and then there'll be another decision. And that's what puzzles me, as it may Judge Rovner, mm-hmm. about where there's a claim of irreparable injury. True, it would mean you'd have to run the arbitration again, but it's pretty well established that the cost of running an arbitration is not irreparable injury.
Well, there's a distinction there, Your Honor, that I think needs to be made. One is with respect to Mr. Gurvitz's interestedness, which was an alternative holding that the judge made. The other is with respect to his breach of the contract.
Look, is the disclosure of confidential information in the case really an irreparable harm? Let's just look at that. I mean, I can, of course, understand how it would be in the ordinary course of events. But in this case, the parties to whom the information has been disclosed, in other words, the other two arbitrators, consider themselves bound by the confidentiality agreement. And so in an important sense, the cat isn't really, you know, out of the bag. If Gurvitz disclosed to the other two members of the second panel some information that he shouldn't have, isn't the simple solution the parties get a new hearing, just like Judge Easterbrook says?
But, Your Honor, this is the key point. Mr. Gurvitz wasn't talking about documents that had been exchanged in the prior arbitration. Mr. Gurvitz was talking about panel deliberations. Those are sacrosanct. Judge Zagel found, properly, that arbitrators like judges are presumed to be able to segregate in their mind information that they've heard in one proceeding from another. Gervitz stated on the record...
Go ahead.
Mr. Gervitz stated on the record explicitly that he felt he was duty-bound to correct the record when he believed Trustmark was misstating what happened in the prior arbitration and what the prior award meant. That crossed the line...
All questions of irreparable injury to one side. What's wrong with that? Suppose there is another lawsuit between Trustmark and John Hancock, and it's assigned to Judge Zagel. Would you say Judge Zagel is not disinterested in the next lawsuit because he presided in the first one and may have to interpret the meaning of his own decision in order to determine what happens in the next lawsuit?
I don't think those are even close, Your Honor. I'll tell you what's wrong with what Mr. Gervitz did.
I don't understand what's wrong with Gervitz, because you've got somebody who was an adjudicator in case number one. There's a dispute about the meaning and effect of the decision in case number one, and the same person who adjudicated case number one is now adjudicating case number two.
That's not
what judges do all the time without anybody thinking that that deprives them of their disinterest.
Your Honor, in this case, Mr. Gervitz is one of three members. Now, he was one of three members in the prior panel.
I don't want to be too obvious, but there are three of us here.
Right.
And if there's a subsequent dispute between Trustmark and Hancock under Circuit Operating Procedure 6B, the three of us are going to decide. We will talk to one another about what we did this time. That is, we're going to do the very same thing that you say makes Gervitz not disinterested.
The major difference is, Your Honor,
you haven't... You agreed to Gervitz in the first place.
Easterbrook is you haven't signed a confidentiality agreement with Trustmark keeping your conversations in this hearing confidential.
We keep them confidential. Don't worry.
Well, some of us. Do you agree? do you agree that the confidentiality agreement was extended to the two new arbitrators in the second arbitration panel?
The panel purported to do that.
Now,
in the 2-1.
Yes or no? Come on.
No. The panel attempted to do that in a 2-1 decision, but they did not have the authority. Reason being, the Supreme Court case law is clear, Your Honor. Arbitration
is. Forgive me, but could you repeat that? Because it didn't go through.
I'm sorry?
Could you repeat what you just said?
The panel said in a 2-1 decision they were extending confidentiality. There was a dissent by Trustmark's arbitrator. That fact is undisputed. That is, in fact, one of the breaches of the confidentiality agreement that was found by Judge Zagel.
The other two arbitrators agreed to be bound by the confidentiality agreement, right?
That's correct.
So how
But extending to those two arbitrators did not give Mr. Gervitz license to disclose deliberations from the prior panel. What the record shows is after confidentiality was breached, the second panel materially rewrote the first panel's award. And that could only have been accomplished by Mr. Gervitz.
Just to say that you disagree with their understanding of the award, and the fact that one party disagrees with a decision of the arbitrators is not a ground for a mid-arbitration injunction. One would think, indeed, that anybody who made that argument would be viewed as making something that's sanctionably frivolous, except that the district court granted you relief.
Well, Judge, we did not do it at that point. We did it at the...
Why would it matter at what point?
How do you justify this pre-award intervention?
Okay, I would like to... I'll answer both of those questions.
All you're telling us has some merit to it. I don't know what...
Your Honor, we sought the injunction after Mr. Gervitz made the statement on the record that he felt he was duty-bound to correct what transpired in the first arbitration.
Well, so what?
Yeah, what non-financial harm would Trustmark have suffered if a preliminary injunction had not been issued? Where is it?
The arbitration would have been proceeded, and then we would have been left under Section 10 of the Arbitration Act, which this Court has said it's not enough for petitioners to show that the panel committed an error or even a serious error. It's only when the arbitrator strays from the interpretation and application of the agreement.
What non-financial harm, please?
The harm would have been, Your Honor, if this had proceeded and Trustmark lost, and there was a one-sentence award saying Trustmark pays $40 million, the breach of this contract would have been subsumed into that award and would have been effectively unreviewable. Trustmark did not bargain for arbitration of the confidentiality agreement.
I don't think you have answered the question what non-financial harm Trustmark would receive. It sounds like you're pointing to a financial harm. That is, it will lose the arbitration and have to pay money or not get as much as it would otherwise. Well, I mean, that's a lot of people think they're going to lose arbitrations, but that's not a ground for getting mid-arbitration relief on the contention that you've got to, dear judge, you've got to review issues arising in the arbitration, because if you don't review it now, we won't be able to win later. If that were the law, the whole premise of arbitration as being speedy and cheap would be in a thousand pieces.
But that's not
it's hard enough as it is, but mid-trial injunctions against arbitration, that's the end.
Your Honor, that's not what's happening here. There is not
of
exactly
course
what
it
happened
is.
Here. Well, you asked for and got a mid-trial injunction against the arbitration.
The district court enjoined the parties from proceeding
with the arbitration.
No, with Mr. Gurvitz on the panel. The arbitration could have proceeded.
Well, you've done your best to blacken Gurvitz throughout your argument to the extent that it makes me rather suspicious of your whole argument.
I think he acted quite reasonably under the particular circumstances, don't
you? Is that a reference to Mr. Gurvitz? Or I'm sorry, Chester.
Yeah,
We don't. We think it's not part of the custom and practice. As the umpire stated during the organizational meeting, it's not part of the custom and practice of the industry for arbitrators to talk about their prior awards. And Mr. Gurvitz did that, and he signed a contract saying he shouldn't do that. And as to Your Honor's point about a mid-arbitration injunction, there is no precedent, as far as we have seen, that says if there is an independent contract that's not subject to arbitration, that the district court is not entitled to issue relief. The other important aspect for this court to remember is Judge Zagel not only enjoined this because of the breach of the confidentiality agreement, he enjoined Mr. Gurvitz because Mr. Gurvitz had violated orders of Judge Zagel. He said specifically in his opinion twice that Mr. Gurvitz's breach, which is a finding by the court, a factual finding entitled to deference, violated the district court's orders when the original award was confirmed and Judge Zagel confirmed the confidentiality of that arbitration. Under any set of circumstances, arbitration aside, we are unaware of any cases that would prohibit the court its remedial power in enforcing its own orders.
Why wouldn't the Federal Arbitration Act provide an adequate remedy to address any harms Trustmark might suffer?
Your Honor, as I spoke about that, the standard under the FAA is extremely lenient and deferential. Even if an arbitrator commits an error of law, you cannot overturn that. In this instance, a ruling on a non-arbitrable contract would be subsumed in the ruling on the merits and would be effectively unreviewable.
That's why I asked the question again. I know that you felt you answered the question before, but that's why I asked the question.
Well, the other point
what
I would
unreviewable.
Well, it's
if he murdered one of the other two arbitrators, it's unreviewable.
No, Your Honor.
I'm
sorry. It's akin to what the court has found in mandamus.
A hypothetical rather than a suggestion.
I don't know about that.
It's akin to the court's holdings in mandamus cases. Many times there are rulings by district court judges that if they're not ruled on by mandamus, will not be effectively reviewable at the conclusion of the trial, and the court has said that's irreparable harm. They've done that in forum selection cases, in cases.
Boy, you really have taken away all our jurisdiction.
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Yeah, I think so. I think you think we have a lot. We're powerful people sitting up here.
I think this court, the district court, appropriately entered the injunction. And the district court was giving effect to the intent of the parties when they signed a contract that was not subject to arbitration. Trustmark and John Hancock are sophisticated insurance and reinsurance companies. They knew how to make that confidentiality agreement subject to arbitration. They also knew how to incorporate the prior arbitration agreement into it, and they didn't either.
Well, you wouldn't
suppose,
think, yeah.
Suppose Trustmark and John Hancock had signed a contract lacking an arbitration clause that said, in resolving disputes between us, we will apply the federal rules of civil procedure. And now an arbitration comes up, and an argument is made that the federal rules of civil procedure have this meaning rather than that meaning. Can you go to the district court and get an injunction compelling the arbitrators to apply the district court's view of the federal rules of civil procedure in mid-arbitration on the ground that the federal rule of civil procedure contract does not itself have an arbitration clause in it?
Well, Your Honor, I think that would be no different than what this court did in Duthie versus Matria. In that case, that's a case where this circuit enjoined an arbitration, and it was no different than the facts in the case before Judge Sagel.
Now, wait a minute. Duthie was based on the fact that there wasn't an arbitration clause.
Yeah.
Correct?
Well, there was an agreement with an arbitration.
Here you're not taking that line. You're saying that you can't proceed here because you got a bad arbitrator.
No, Your Honor, I don't think it's different, and I'll explain why.
There is plainly an arbitration clause. This reinsurance dispute is arbitrable. In the course of arbitrating the agreeably arbitrable dispute, a question arises about the meaning of contract number two, which itself does not have an arbitration clause in it. Now, Ducey certainly wasn't that. The case I gave you is, right, contract number two says we like the federal rules of civil procedure more than the American Arbitration Association's standard rules. Does it follow from that you can get a district court injunction to cover, one after another, every procedural question that arises in the arbitration?
I don't think that's this case, Your Honor.
Of course it's not this case. This case doesn't have anything to do with the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. That's why this is called a hypothetical. But I wish you'd answer my question nonetheless.
No, Your Honor. The fact is, in Rosenblum versus Travelbus, in Industrial Electronics versus iPower...
I wish you would answer my question.
The answer is no, Your Honor. That's the.
Now tell me why that's any different from this case.
In this case, Your Honor, we have a dispute that was not agreed to be arbitrated. The Supreme Court has said that...
That's my hypothetical.
Well, then I may be misunderstanding your hypothetical, Your Honor. I'm sorry. But if that's the hypothetical, then you could sue for breach of that contract as long as, under the precedent of this circuit, Omron, Travel by Us, iPower, and the rest, indicate that that arbitration agreement does not incorporate the dispute over the federal rules. The test is clear. It's whether it arguably depends on the construction of the agreement with the arbitration clause. In this case, the dispute over the confidentiality agreement needs no reference to the reinsurance treaty. In this case, the confidentiality agreement has separate parties.
I think you have to answer my hypothetical that on your view, you could file as many lawsuits and get as many injunctions as there are procedural questions that arise in the arbitration, and the district judge would resolve every procedural question in the arbitration. And if that wouldn't be the end of arbitration, this case isn't the end of arbitration, that surely would be.
That surely would be, and we're not seeking an injunction over procedural disputes.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
You sought it, and you got it.
That's right.
No, Your Honor, we beg to differ. The dispute that we're seeking to enjoin is not the preclusion ruling. And Judge Sagel was very clear.
What is it?
It is a procedural issue in the handling of the arbitration about what effect will be given to the outcome of the first arbitration, and indeed whether the other two arbitrators are even entitled to know the outcome of that. That's just a normal procedural ruling. If you think about my initial hypothetical about Judge Sagel presiding in two successive cases between these parties, Judge Sagel may have learned, in confirming the first award, what its terms were. on your view, that would make Judge Zagel no longer disinterested, because in resolving the second case, he already knew what had happened in the first, right? But one would think that whether he was disinterested in that sense is a procedural issue. It's not the substantive issue. And it shouldn't be necessary to go through this kind of thing.
Your Honor, the disinterestedness was not the mere fact that Mr. Gervitz had participated in the prior arbitration. It was his breach of the confidentiality agreement that was aiding and abetting the fraud of John Hancock. That's, in our view, a different circumstance. And with respect to the disinterested finding of the district court, that is purely an alternative finding of the judge. The judge's original main finding is that the confidentiality agreement is not subject to arbitration. Going back to my Duthie example, in that case, there was an arbitration agreement that had arising out of language. There was, I see my time is up. May I finish this point?
Finish your sentence.
There was an arising out of arbitration clause, and the petitioner in that arbitration attempted to bring fraud claims against individuals. The AAA decided
now
they...
Now become a run-on sentence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May I ask him
a question? Of course.
Before you sit down, just sort of apropos of nothing, are Trustmark and John Hancock involved in any other situations?
If you mean disputes, no. If they have other business relationships,
yeah,
they might.
Yeah, business relationships I'm interested in.
I can't speak for the entirety of Trustmark, but I think there may be other reinsurance relationships.
Because, I mean, this is so hotly contested. I just, you know, wonder how you can be friends.
If Your Honor is interested, the contention arises from the withholding of the evidence in the first arbitration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you, you say that was such a terrible sin, but you didn't attach a copy of that document to your brief. We don't know what it is.
It's in the record, Your Honor.
You're saying that was the original sin here, but you didn't produce much evidence.
Well,
reading your brief.
The trial court was certainly moved by it, and his findings are subject to some weight. It is in the record, and I apologize that it was not part of our brief.
Yeah, you don't ever want us, you know, rooting around looking for stuff that is so necessary. Well, I mean, we do, but we shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I apologize.
Yeah, thanks.
If there are no further questions, thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Koukouras?
Briefly, Your Honor, if I may. We certainly agree with the Court's commentary that the FAA and the case law interpreted prohibits interlocutory appeals. There is no evidence that there was fraudulent withholding of documents, and that issue is not properly before the Court in the context of this dispute. But I did want to address one issue. Trustmark has argued repeatedly that arbitrator Gervitz disclosed panel deliberations. There is no example of that whatsoever in the record. Arbitrator Gervitz did not breach the confidentiality agreement and did not improperly disclose anything. He participated in a decision as to the effect of that confidentiality agreement in the second arbitration. Before Trustmark agreed to his appointment, he said, I will follow the panel's decisions regarding that confidentiality agreement, and that is exactly what he proceeded to do. Once confidentiality was extended to the second arbitration, the material was there for the arbitrators and for the parties who already had it from the first arbitration. Later in the arbitration, over a year before this lawsuit, Trustmark's counsel characterized an aspect of the first award. John Hancock's counsel disagreed with the way he recited that award. John Hancock's counsel said, so let's not suggest somehow that the ruling in that case, meaning the first arbitration, was anything different than what it actually was. And Mr. Gervitz said, is there disagreement on it? Because that's my recollection as well. It was a recollection of what the award stated, an award available to the parties and the panel. And there was nothing improper about his correction of that statement.
I don't know, because obviously I haven't read the record, in the hopes that I won't get the case. But and if it isn't in the record, don't respond. But what has this done to Mr. Gervis's reputation or his ability to be an arbitrator? But if it's not in the
record, I could say, regardless of whether it's within the record, the court could take judicial notice that it, Mr. Gervis, the former chairman of Arias U.S., had his name tarnished by this district court opinion, and that's evident, and that the opinion itself is in the record, and you could draw whatever conclusions you can from that. But it is certainly a particularly troubling aspect of this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.